Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Brandon Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Hey, Monkey, this is Tornado Johnny Benigo.
And welcome to another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We have special guest Reggie Too Sweet Johnson coming on later in the broadcast around 9:15. And you know, there's so much to talk about. Since we don't have Mr. Psychic on the line just yet, let's go right to the boxing. I actually watched the boxing match this weekend, Tony, in the middle of a UFC fight. Can you believe it?
Well, that means I think you're coming back to the light.
Yeah. Yurkis Gamboa. Can you have a good day against Mr. Terrence Crawford? The fight was in Crawford's hometown of Omaha, Nebraska. And from what I remember them saying, it was the first world title fight ever held in Omaha, Nebraska as well. And what a fight it was. Terrence Crawford got the better of Gamboa for sure. Knocked him all around the ring. Knocked him down a few times before the ref halted the action. And at the end, Gamboa's corner was so intent on keeping him, you know, standing up and conscious and focused that they poured a bunch of ice water down his pants. I don't know if any of your coaches ever did that to you or any of your, near boxing experience, you've seen anybody do that, but I don't think that worked.
Well, the only time I remember that was the fight I was having up in SUNY Westchester, up in SUNY University, New York.
Right.
My actual trainer from Philly was up. Hey, Rich, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm trying like a new wireless piece tonight. See what helps improve people hearing me. But my trainer from Philly was up, and in the first round, I was a little bit off my game. I think part of it was because my actual opponent had canceled. We had a real bad windstorm that day, and I was looking for to keep from Mansfield, and they didn't make it over the Tappan Bridge. We made it. My dad made it, and then at 10 minutes after we both crossed the bridge, the bridge closed. So I ended up doing an exhibition with one of my own teammates. And my trainer was there. He was working my corner, and Dr. Cox was working so that could chase a puncher's corner. So, I mean, I was kind of like going down there. I went, okay, it's an exhibition, it's one of my own guys. And I remember, the second round, I went out there, I think my trainer, took a few ice water, and he put it over the back of my neck. I mean, he didn't get it down my trunks. I mean, I've seen that done a lot of times. Put it over the back of my neck, and I was kind of like, almost like, not to say like woke me up, but it was almost like, basically like getting ice water dumped on me, and I came like, hey, yo, it's like, yo, what the hell are you doing? He's like, wait, you're feeling a little sluggish up there, I'm trying to wake you up. I'm like, dude, I'm awake.
Well, what happened in the Gamboa fight was he started slipping on the stuff that was dripping off the shorts, and I wasn't listening to the actual HBO broadcast. I was listening to, unfortunately, the Mad Hatter on a separate broadcast overseas, I guess. The old HBO guy. Can't even think of his name.
Is it Howard Letterman?
No. The Mad Hatter. The guy that was a drunk and left HBO.
Oh.
Larry Merchant.
Speaking
of that, Tom is here.
Hello, yes, sir. All right. Feels good to be home.
A good segue in, Tom.
All right.
The shorts there, one of the guys was saying was so wet, they were so wet, it was like you just got out of the swimming pool. and he ended up slipping all over the ring on it in the last couple of rounds, and then just got popped one too many times. And actually, Crawford said after the fight, he shouldn't even have taken this fight to Gamboa. And what I was thinking about after the fact is, you know, this is the difference between a natural champion and an engineered challenger, or contender, I guess you could say, because I can't really say, I didn't really look deeply at his record, but I know that Gamboa's been one of those guys that they've wanted to make a champion from day one, and they've built him back. He was even wrapped up in the whole scandal with the steroids down there in Florida, with the, I don't think it was Balco, or I think it was some other group, but yeah, same people that Barry Bonds got in trouble for working with.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I've watched Gamboa play. I mean, I followed his career when he was first starting out. And we've been talking about this fight with Terrence Crawford. I didn't even know a whole lot about Crawford, but from what I'd seen, I had been impressed. And from Gamboa, even early in his career, he was so extraordinarily fast with such great reflexes. He was an offensive machine. But a lot of times, at the same time, he'd make the same mistake where he would make the mistake that his defense would suffer because of his offense. And there were times, like, even against inferior opposition, he was knocked down on a number of occasions.
Right.
And I remember when he fought my friend Rogers in Chicago. I mean, he beat Rogers in 2 rounds. He was just too fast. Rogers just couldn't keep up with him. But, I mean, we went into that fight with the hope that Rogers would be able to, you know, maybe catch him, you know, in an exchange. And the guy had been knocked down so many times in his career. So, you know, if Rogers catches him with a shot, you never know. I mean, he's an underdog, but you never know. And then didn't work out that way. But I remember a friend of mine, Charles Hatcher Brewer, a former world champion guest on our show, he had posted on there before the fight people's predictions. And I remember what I said was Gamboa's a natural featherweight. And he's a great Cuban amateur champion. And we hope he was a world champion in like his 7th or 8th fight or something ridiculous like that. You know, he was a tremendous amateur champion. I said, but at the same time, he's a natural featherweight. Crawford is a lightweight, and he's a big lightweight. And I could, and then Gamboa, if he's having a problem with his chin at featherweight, what's going to happen when a big lightweight hits him? And for the first 2 rounds, I remember watching the fight with my dad, and my dad was like, he was saying, man, this fight looks like a mismatch in the first round, and he thought it was going to be a situation with Gamboa really just dominating. He's like, I think this is going to be a one-sided fight, because for the first few rounds, you know, Gamboa's natural speed and athleticism was carrying the day. Crawford made adjustments. And even the HBO broadcast said, sometimes you get these great amateur fighters that are just that. They're 3 to 5 round fighters. And you get them beyond that, it's like, you know, guys adapt, and they're kind of screwed. And or sometimes you see guys even like Mike Tyson. You know, he was so used to blowing guys out of the water that when guys lasted and weathered that early storm, he had a hard time adapting. And that's what Crawford did. Now, I usually am not one for switching up. I don't like, you know, going back and forth between southpaw and orthodox. But it worked for Crawford because he has a powerful right hand, and he ended up by using it as his lead hand for a hook, which he was that much closer to landing it instead of throwing it from the conventional right-handed stance. And that's what eventually worked, and Gamboa's chin, you know, was his liability.
Exactly. And that was another thing that Larry Merchant aggravated me about, was just talking about how Crawford was switching from self-taught to orthodox all the time, and he didn't like it, and said it wasn't a good idea, and then, of course, proves him wrong and started winning the fight. So, sometimes it works. I mean, actually, I think it would work better in an MMA setting, and, you know, obviously I haven't trained all the aspects of MMA, so maybe Tom can jump in on this one, but... when I'm hitting the bag, trying to, you know, work my knees and elbows and into my workouts now, I find that going southpaw every now and then helps. Not only because you get tired on the orthodox side when you go too many rounds, but you know, there's different opportunities for different kicks and different types of knees. And, switching up definitely helps, and kicks especially.
Yeah, definitely. I would say with kicks, but with the punches, I'm totally in Tony's camp. I think that it would be on someone to prove they can do it, and most people just aren't really that good at it. But as far as kicking, you know, you have the old Muay Thai switch kick. That's good, but then I would always prefer to get right back into my, you know, my conventional stance afterwards. So you have a good point with that, but I'd still recommend pretty much, you know, go where you belong. Stay where you belong.
Right.
You know what else is funny? I went over a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and his son, who's now going to be 15, I remember being in the hospital when the kid was born. Now he's taller than me. And so I come over. I hadn't seen him in about a year and a half. So, the first thing he wanted to do was he was like punching me in the arm. He wanted to box me. And the first thing he did was he was as a southpaw. I said, "Not in my gym, son. Not in my gym. My gym, I'm turning you around, and I'm making you fight conventional. I don't want to fight that way." I said, "Well, what I trained is you're going to fight that way." And we were talking back and forth. And then I brought up my best point, and this is why I break it every time somebody wants to box with their lead hand forward, and some guys get away with it. Oscar De La Hoya, Michael Moore, some of those guys, I mean, they were natural. De La Hoya was a natural left-hander. Michael Moore was a natural right-hander. But I told this little poor Dominic, I said, "You pitch, don't you?" "Yeah, I pitch." "You're a good pitcher, aren't you?" "Yeah." I said, get your pitcher stance and show me how you pitch. And he had his right foot back, and he lead it, and then he followed through with his pitch. And I said, "If you pitch like that, why do you want to box the opposite direction?"
Let me ask you, yeah. Tony, did this kid have a background in any traditional martial art? Are you aware of that?
No, I've known the kid his whole life. No, he's had no martial art background.
Okay, because you see a lot of that, I've noticed more in the traditional arts, they would do more of that stuff. And maybe it stems from some of Bruce Lee's early teachings. He felt that it's best that you have your power hand closer to your opponent. And, you know, for all the genius that Bruce Lee came up with, I think he dropped the ball on that one, in my opinion.
And my theory on the whole thing is about the picture. I always do. Anytime anybody ever comes over to work out with me, first thing I do is I give them a tennis ball. And I say, "Stop." Because the natural thing you're going to do is you're going to go with your, you're going to throw it like you normally would, like with your back foot. I'm right-handed, I'm going to put my back foot back, and I'm going to throw it to you. And I said, "Okay, that's the way you pitch. Why do you want to box a different way?" And people like me, I guess with my style, I'm so messed up because as being a right-hander with my right foot back, I'm a left-hook guy. So everything I was powered on was a hard jab and a hard hook. And then later in my career, I developed the right hand because I was starting to get my feet not spread as far apart, like about turn my hip. But so me, my power hand was technically the one that was closer. But at the same time, if I was the opposite direction where I had my right hand from, my right jab, I don't think would have been as good as my left. My right hook would not have been as good as my left hook. And my straight left from the southpaw hand would have been horrible. Whereas a conventional stance, I'm able to generate power now with both hands. But like I said, I'm screwed up. I think it's my brain doesn't work and it sends its signals all wrong anymore.
Right up here, I gave some boxing lessons too. And we took a couple karate classes together. So, we both are interested in fighting. He had that same problem with not knowing whether he was right-handed or left-handed. He just kind of, the more he hit the bag, the more he just got more comfortable in the left-handed stance. But, they call that ambidextrous when somebody can write with one hand or the other.
I'll tell you what also threw me off a little bit during my formative years. I am ambidextrous. I cannot even come close to drawing or writing with my left hand. I cannot throw with my left hand. But boxing-wise, I punch harder and faster with my left. That is my dominant punching hand. On the other side, kicking, I can only kick with my left. Don't ask.
Yeah, right.
I'm screwed up.
All right, well, we got to move on. Gamboa fight, it was pretty good. Congratulations to Mark Crawford. I think he really had a great strategy in the fight. Good fight, and I think Gamboa will bounce back. That was the big boxing match of the weekend. We had two big UFC cards. Like I said, I actually switched over from the UFC card at one point to watch the Gamboa fight. So I've got the key rounds later on, pretty much. I didn't really watch it. But I was watching the UFC stuff. I woke up at 5 in the morning to watch the New Zealand card here with Nate Marquardt and James Tahuna. And screwed up my sleep schedule, something fierce. I actually just woke up at 7:30. I'm still trying to shake it off. But, of course, the main event, Nate Marquardt destroyed Tahuna in the first round within the first 30 seconds. Actually, 4 seconds inside the first 30 seconds there. Got an armbar submission, and he just looked like a brute. Just totally wiped out Tahuna, and it looked better than ever.
Now like I think the question there would be, is Marquardt back, or was this more his opponent?
Quality of competition, yeah. I think it was quality of competition. I mean, when I first heard, Marquardt versus Tahuna, I was like, this is a main event, Tahuna, I think, just because of his heritage there and his connection to New Zealand, got the opportunity, so. And Marquardt really does have to kind of build himself back up to get back into title contention, so this is a good step-up fight for him in some way. But he moves to 33-13-2 with the win, and Tahuna falls to 16-8. We had another guy based down there in the New Zealand area, Soa Palele. One of the reasons we couldn't get him on the show was because of the time difference there. But Jared Rocholt took him out. Let's see what this kind of fade results here. If I remember, I think it was a decision. Then we had Charles Oliveira beat Hatsu Hayoki by Anaconda Choke in the second round, the 432 mark. Robert Whitaker beat Mike Rhodes. Again, every other one here, I can't see the result for some reason. The way I've got it cut and pasted here. Jake Matthews beat Deshaun Johnson by a triangle choke submission in the third round. Richie Baculik beat Roldan Sangchaan. Vic Grucic beat Chris Indich by TKO. Neil Magny beat Rodrigo Goyana de Lima. Daniel Hooker beat Ian Entwistle, and Gian Vellante beat Sean O'Connell there to round that one out. And we had the big one, Cub Swanson versus Jeremy Stevens in Texas later that night. And you got to give it to Kenny Florian, going from broadcasting in New Zealand all the way to Texas in one day. Must have had a lot of flight time. he made it. And that was a good card. This Cub Swanson versus Jeremy Stevens was a real war for all five rounds. And Cub Swanson ended up getting the win and wants a rematch with Jose Aldo. And he's hoping that this time it lasts a lot longer than 18 seconds. So we'll see. We'll see, definitely. And Kelvin Gastelum also took out Nicholas Musoki, and another great effort on his part. He looked, I think, better than ever. He did have a little bit of a controversy with the weight. Came in 2 pounds over, and some information came out that, his money isn't being managed all that well. I think Mike Dolce came out after this fight and said that, fighters should fire their managers and hire good trainers. So I think that was directed at this situation, because Gaston said that while he's been working with Dolce, he's never missed weight. And, he blamed that, not working with him this time around as part of the problem. And Dolce himself, I guess, was owed something like $2,000 in expenses that he's still never been paid from the last time he worked with Gastelum because of the management team. So I think Dolce is right in some ways. You do need somebody, though, that can do a little bit more than pick up a phone, because that was his point. Dolce said, don't be paying these guys 20% for picking up a phone. So it is what it is there, but I think his manager does a little bit more than that, or at least should. Then we had Cesar Ferreira versus Andrew Craig. Ferreira won that one by unanimous decision. Ricardo Lamas beat Hakran Diaz. But Hester had kind of what I thought was a bit of a controversial split decision against Antonio Braga Neto. And it's just one of the cards with these split decisions that Joe Ellenberger versus James Montessori, these are two back-to-back fights that I thought probably should have gone the other way. And for whatever reason, whether it's the name, the face recognition, all that stuff, or whatever it was, these guys got the wins. Ellenberger in particular, I thought, got his ass kicked. And, kind of came on late in the fight and then just kind of stole his decision. But just the differing, not only just the fact that it was a split decision, but the scores themselves didn't make any sense to me on those two. But I did think Joe Ellenberger made a really great showing for himself in his first appearance there. And like I said before the fight, I think he's related to Jake, and Jake was in his corner because they're brothers. So it's in their blood, I guess. And Clint had a win streak going, so he was able to extend that by the miracle, I guess, of judging. So we had Cody Gibson beat Johnny Bedford. Marcelo Guimaraes beat Andy Enns. Ray Borg beat Shane Howell. And Alexei Olenek beat Anthony Hamilton there to round that one. So that's the stuff that already happened. Now we go to one of the biggest fight weeks in Vegas. We've got three different cards in Vegas this weekend. I don't know if the World Series of Fighting one is in Vegas, but there's three different MMA fights this weekend. We've got one UFC 175, Weidman versus Machida. We got our boy Patrick Walsh fighting on the Ultimate Fighter 19 finale against Daniel Spawn. We'll get to all that a little bit later, but I do want to get to some news. Just talked about a couple of the big results from last week. We got a lot of news, news coverage to get through before we get Reggie on later.
Before we do any news coverage, can I ask Tom a question?
Sure.
Tom.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask you about a fighter, and I want you to tell me if you've ever heard of him, because I know you're a psychic and you've been watching fights a long time. Do you remember a fighter back in the 60s and the 70s out of Philadelphia by the name of Jeff Frazier?
Yes, okay.
Okay. Did you see the work they are doing on the Jeff Frazier statue?
No.
Okay. I'm going to send this to both of you guys. I was privileged last week. I know the original statue that they approved and they were working on, it was going to be by the same sculptor, Larry Nolan, who did the Harry Cowell statue at the Philadelphia Philly Stadium that was completed about, I think, back in 2011 or 12. I think it was 12. And Larry Nolan, excellent sculptor, mid-project, passes away. So they actually turned it over, and I apologize because I don't have the guy's name in front of me now, but the guy that has taken over the project is a former fighter, big Joe Frazier fan, and they did a piece on Philadelphia Sports Night the other night, and they showed it. And I actually was floored. It's not going to be as big as the Marciano one, I think, but I think the detail is a little bit better, to be totally honest. And I'm gonna. I actually said it to our guest today, from Tori Nelson, who, when she got on the air, she told us she was a big Joe Frazier fan. So as soon as I saw that, I pulled a YouTube clip and sent it to her.
Yeah, that reminds me. I'm going to add her on Facebook and follow her on Twitter.
Yeah, she won last week. I know she won. I didn't see the particulars, but I know that she won.
Yeah, Tom, you missed a great show last week, full of technical difficulties.
Okay. Yeah, I was having my own out there, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah. And, Tony, I just want to say I'm glad you weren't anywhere near that food truck that exploded the other day. Hope you didn't know anybody that got hurt.
I didn't. So, but, yeah, thank you for your well wishes. You and you Boston guys that I'm always trying to fight.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't see that. I didn't get a chance to comment yet, but that's kind of funny. Anyway, getting to the news. First piece I got here. Retiring again, Matt Hamill has decided to officially hang up his gloves for good. He had fights he had coming up, actually, and had to pull up because of a major knee injury. So he said, first and foremost, I would like to thank my most loyal fans for standing by me throughout my 10-year career with MMA. All good things must come to an end, and I am saddened that the time has come for me to hang up my gloves permanently due to a nagging injury that has never healed and has worsened with time. The memories have been good. And this is the second time Hamill has retired from the sport. Actually, in 2011, Hamill retired from competition after he KO'd by Alexander Gustafsson. And who knew that guy wasn't going to be a world beater? was going to be a world beater. Hamill returned a year later to win a lackluster decision with Roger Hollett at UFC 2. He ended up getting cut after going 1-3 in his last four bouts for the UFC. So the World Series of Fighting picked him up, and it was actually, yeah, Daytona, Florida is where the World Series of Fighting is going to be this weekend. World Series of Fighting 11. So he had to pull out, and then he just decided to retire. His career highlights a sensational head kick knockout victory over Mark Munoz, wins over Tito Ortiz, Keith Jardine, and Tim Butch. And I guess famously you could say that, you know, he's, even though it's not really a highlight of his career, he's got the on the record of John Jones for his only technical loss by disqualification. So there you have it.
Maybe we'll see that on the fight version of Jeopardy. Yeah, that's an interesting trivia. Yeah.
Of course, BJ Penn has a big fight coming up this weekend against Frankie Edgar. And he's trying to have basically a career rebirth at 145 pounds. His featherweight debut, or it's Frankie Edgar's featherweight debut. I'm not sure the way this article works. I believe this guy is having his debut, but anyway. Sounds like they're trying to talk about BJ. So Dana White, of course, has to put his big nose in the way, big mouth, I should say. He said, this is BJ Penn's last fight possibly. He told Fox Sports 1 on Tuesday. And said, if he wins, we'll see what he does from there, but if he loses, I will actually push for him to retire. And then he added, it could be possibly watching Michael Jordan play his last basketball game. Could be Tiger Woods' last golf game. So way to go, Dana White, for giving a guy a backhanded compliment.
You know, BJ Penn, when we play that degrees of separation game, which is kind of a nerd game, but it's I've always found it fascinating. In boxing, it's really great too when you get that. What's the connection between Jack Dempsey and Vladimir Klitschko? And you know how that works. You know, you see those in the ring, mm-hmm. magazine a lot. You know, Tony, I love stuff like that.
Every month.
Oh, that's fascinating. And in MMA, BJ Penn is the link more than just about anyone else because BJ had, you know, he fought Machida back in the early days. He just he'd go with just about anyone, and it seems like almost every one of these links crosses the BJ Penn name, so we'll see how he does. I think he's got an uphill battle. I think that when you lose twice pretty decisively, I just think that Edgar has his number. And at 145, I think that Edgar would still have an edge there too in the quickness, and that's what got him the first two victories. But
right.
We'll see what happens.
Well, I think the rest might help. You know, as far as making it a more competitive fight, but I agree with Tom on this one. I think Edgar's going to take it. We'll get to the rest of the card a little bit later. Golden Boy and Richard Schaefer. This story's gotten a little bigger over the last couple weeks. Now they're going to arbitration. Apparently, Golden Boy is looking for $50 million in damages from Schaefer.
Ooh.
Although no allegations have really surfaced as to what that's all about, kind of like how nobody's really sure what happened with the last hurrah there when they split ways. You know. But the big speculation is it's got something to do with Al Haymon and them trying to go out and start a new company. Al Haymon in recent weeks has been, you know, just checking off the boxes, getting more fighters on his stable, and you know, it looks like Floyd Mayweather is definitely splitting from Golden Boy too. So, you know, doesn't seem all that far fetched that Schaefer would try to set up something brand new and bigger and better than Golden Boy and take some secrets or tricks of the trade, I guess, with him. But looks like Oscar De La Hoya is not happy about it and wants some money out of it. $50 million. He could get that much if he unretired. and fought Floyd Mayweather again, but now he's going to try to get it in a legal fight. So I don't know what the deal is, but MMA Payout actually did this story off an ESPN report, and their perspective is, while we may not know the claims against Schaefer, the speculation that Schaefer and Al Haymon may go into business together may be one of the claims Golden Boy is making. Golden Boy might claim that Schaefer breached his fiduciary duty as CEO by not acting in the company's best interests. And the recent Main Event lawsuit filed against Al Haymon paints the picture that Schaefer and Haymon have worked together in the past. And the legal action is not surprising considering the public departure of Schaefer and other staff, such as Michael Miller. Is what it is there. Now, here's one from Tom. Tom sent me this little article about a fighter by the name of Brian Minto about to fight New Zealand heavyweight Joseph Parker. And Parker's trainer, Kevin Barry, revealed that the American Minto has been taking testosterone. And, of course, Minto claims it's TRT, the testosterone replacement therapy that got banned from MMA competition. I guess it's got to be boxing competition in Nevada, too. But apparently it's not banned all over the world because Minto is still able to fight here. And the trainer there tried to get a drugs test for both men, but that fell through this week. As apparently professional boxing has not signed up to the World Anti-Doping Agency protocols for testing. Minto confirmed that he's been on the TRT for 5 years. He said, Brian told me probably about 4 or 5 months ago. He asked me, do you have a drama with it? And I said, so long as it's cleared, I don't have a drama with it. I guess that's a New Zealand way of saying issue, drama. I understand he's on prescription and he's also got a medical clearance, so I don't have any problem with it. He added it comes down to what levels he's at, but it's very difficult to get testing done with validity. And Minto was actually pretty pissed for somebody revealing his medical condition. And like Jael Sonnen, he said he suffers from hypogonadism, which is a condition in which the body does not produce enough testosterone. And he also added he has a ton of medical papers if anyone wants to see them. Barry didn't take the bait, though. He said, I don't know if he thinks admitting to the promoter that he's taking testosterone is okay because the excuse that I told him, it's not. The bottom line is it's illegal and he shouldn't be taking it. The whole aspect that I'm taking it because of medical reasons is a crock of shit. He's taking it because of the results that it gives him, the increased strength, the lean muscle mass, and recovery. He wants at nearly the age of 40 to feel like he did when he was in his 20s. And obviously he said he pointed out how his body's changed. And, this is another controversy in the testosterone area. But, yeah, I really wasn't aware until Tom sent this that they didn't have a capacity to test for that in boxing. I don't know if I'm sure that's just a misconception on his part. But, I would think they would treat this the same way they have in the UFC in boxing. And try to prevent fighters from using it. But at the same time, I think even in the MMA, the way it's set up now, the exemptions are banned, but that doesn't mean TRT is banned. I mean, you could still do TRT if you can do it and stay in a normal range, I think. I don't think they can just, test you. And then I guess the ban means that you can't... I don't think you could before either, but a test in a higher range, if you're random tested, you still can't test in a higher range, even when you had the exemption. So, I don't know where the controversy should be any different, but I would think that they ought to have the same random drug testing and be able to catch him if he's abusing it. So, next time Minto tries to come to Nevada, I think this will become a bigger issue. Gets up in arms about it like this. Some more boxing stuff, of course. News we probably should have saved for a little earlier, Floyd Mayweather decided Maidana going to be his next opponent September 13th. Going to be a rematch. I think this is a wise move on his part, just to quiet the doubters. And I think he's pretty much. Proven, I think, in the past that he's able to make adjustments during fights, so I can imagine he'll make some even better adjustments after watching the film of the first fight. And I don't know if Marcos Maidana has much of a chance unless he completely revolutionizes his style. And,
haven't we seen this in boxing a lot, though, that the first fight between a real slickster and a banger or more of a brawler type, if the brawler and the banger has a much better chance the first time around. But the second time, he can't make the adjustments. Now, Exhibit A would be look at the Ali Frazier trilogy. Look at Tommy Hearns, there's just a Sugar Ray Leonard with Durant. Look at that situation the first time around.
Durant.
Yeah. I mean, the first time around, Duran had the edge just like Joe Frazier did. But then Leonard was able to make a few more adjustments. And I think we'll see that again. I mean, I think Mayweather will have a much easier time.
And I think the only way it doesn't happen any easier is, I mean, first of all, Mayweather is going to have to improve on what he did for one. I don't know if he can do that. And the other part is it is Mayweather, if he just gets even a little bit older. Every time, every day, he gets a little bit older. And if that's, you know, possibly a case there. I don't see it happening. In fact, for my report on that one, what I'll probably do is just rewrite a few things like the records and the previous fight and pretty much write the same preview as I did the last time. Because I think what should have happened last time will happen this time.
Yeah, I would think that makes sense because old man age, old father time catches everyone, but I just don't think it's going to arrive in time for this one. And like you said, how many adjustments can Maidana make, realistically? How much can he improve? Not saying he can't, but
exactly.
History just is against him. So, I mean, having said that, I hope
it's... I'm looking forward to. Did you hear what fight's supposed to be on the undercard?
I haven't
No.
Adrian Broner and the destructive punching Lucas Matisse.
Oh, that'd be
good.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. I told my dad that one. He's like, I think Matisse knocks him out.
Yeah, could happen.
Oh,
the only thing
yeah.
I can see is Matisse had a hard time in his last fight against, I think it was Molina. They really went at it, you know, tooth and nail. You know, if he lost that aura of invincibility in the fight with Danny Garcia, and then Molina had him banged around a little bit, you know, could it be that maybe he is a little, you know, not as dominant, maybe not as intimidating. But at the same time, you know, I think his punching power, I think he can scare Broner.
Boy, this is, yeah, I think this is one that we'll be looking forward to. And you know, I was thinking of Broner when it was last Friday, you know, for the card I was covering, and I was there at the fighters meeting when the official from Nevada State Athletic Commission was laying down the law, and he was a no-nonsense official. I mean, he reminded me of one of my drill sergeants back in the Army. I mean, he was just saying, and there will be no F-bombs in the interview afterwards. There will be no taunting of your opponent. And I wonder, do the pros get the same kind of talk as the amateurs? I wonder how that works with, you know, I honestly don't know the answer to that because Broner had broke just about everything that this official was warning these fighters not to do. And I would have to think that the boxers would get the same type of pre-fight instructions, you know, the decorum, the code of conduct, as the MMA guys. So...
Yeah. Not to mention it's just common sense, right?
You know what? For professional, I've never heard that you know being said. And I know some fighters, and I know you know, a lot of referees. And my dad, he's been in a few professional locker rooms for the fight when the referees and all come in. And no, that is one that I've never heard. I've never heard that from any of my professional fight, you know, friends that I know, nor from any the trainers that I know. Now,
yeah, that
coming up
yeah.
to amateur fighting, when especially when I competed in collegiate, they had rules, like certain rules on there, and the last few they were a little bit more liberal with them. But I remember during my tenure there, it was you did not speak in the ring during the bout at all. There was no coaching from the corner. I remember Dr. Cox got thrown out of my corner one time. I was fighting a guy. I was behind on the cards. I hurt the guy with a body shot, and Doc the whole time was just kind of jawing that night. And the referee, Tony Wolf, who's a very well-known amateur boxing referee, stopped the bell and was like, out. He's throwing Doc out of the corner, and Doc's arguing with him. And when I started yelling, I'm like, dude, Doc, get out. I got the guy hurt. Just go back. You know, let me try to finish the job. But the one that I remember more than anything, my freshman year, but a kid from Penn State, a big burly kid, you know, he's about my size. And first round, he started taking it to me, and he's tattooing me up pretty good. And then the second round, I'm trying to box him. I'm playing the matador here. In the second round, I threw a jab, and he slipped in on the inside of it, and I'd still say it was intentional. Ran the top of his head right into my face. And when he did that, I mean, I saw stars, and I clenched him, and I looked at the referee, and I said, yo, he just butted me. And the referee looked at me and said, and he did his hands like a duck bill. And he said, no talking. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're warning me? I'm the one that got headbutted in the face. You know, my nose is spouting out blood. And he's like, no talking. I'm like, Jesus Christ. They were strict on that. And, yeah, there would definitely be no taunting. And there would definitely, when the fight was over, no matter how pissed off you were, a little time got up that ring pissed off, you went to the doctor for your post-fight checkup. Because if you didn't, they'd file on your passport and suspend you for 30 days. Person didn't get post-fight checkup, suspend for 30 days for possible concussion. Because they couldn't verify that you didn't have a concussion.
Speaking of head clashes, did you guys see Friday Night Fights where the guy punched himself in the head?
Punched himself in the head? I did not.
Oh, man. That, I don't believe it. I bet it's happened before, but they said that it was the first time it ever happened to their knowledge on Friday Night Fights. But in the main event, I forget the guys' names right now, but I did watch it, so kind of between doing my work on the computer. And they showed the highlight where this guy threw an uppercut and ended up hitting himself right in the forehead.
That's the Three Stooges move. Yeah, I, that happened, I think. Was it Curly or Shump that did that? Yeah.
The favorite one I've ever heard was a fighter back in the 80s was doing an imitation of his hero, Marvin Hagler. And Marvin, a lot of times, would get in the ring and he'd hit himself with a flurry in the forehead. Then he tagged do it all the time. So Marvin would get in the ring and he'd hit himself with about 7 or 8 shots in the forehead. And this fighter decided to also do that. But instead of hitting himself in the forehead, hit himself in the face, broke his nose. And had the fight stop before the fight started.
Wow.
And it was TKO loss.
We had a big event in Boston Sunday, and it was right at City Hall Plaza. They set up a bunch of amateur boxing matches with some young boxers from both Boston and Ireland. And I know, Tony, you visited Boston that time. We went to the Red Sox game, but I don't know if you ever went to downtown and saw City Hall Plaza, but it's quite the place for an event. And they have a lot of, open space celebrations and events there, but this is the first time they ever had boxing.
Oh, cool.
And it was actually conceived by the uncle of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and organized by the Boston Police Athletic League. And 15 Ireland boxers and 21 Boston boxers from ages 9 to 19 participated in the fights. So I'd love to go to another one of those events if they do it again, and sounds like a great event for Fight News Unlimited to cover in the future. But
yeah,
that's great. One of the gym owners involved, Peter Welch, I've met him before at the Boston area, and he said, like, we died and went to heaven to have this opened up to us. So it's great, great international event there for amateur boxers, and they'll probably never have an experience like it again unless they do it again. Getting back to MMA, of course, we just talked about testosterone, and now we got to talk about it in MMA again because Chael Sonnen had all kinds of test release results released recently, and man, he had quite the medicine cabinet. just about everything under the sun that he could take to avoid detection and to, you know, supposedly he said he was taking it to come off DRT, but this is a laundry list of shit that this guy was on. Unbelievable amount of stuff. I think it was like 5 different banned substances. So they actually just had to throw him off of Fox Sports, and the UFC is not going to use him any longer as a broadcast professional. So I guess that throws out the window the idea of him taking over the UFC someday in Dana White's place.
Yeah, sure does.
And I've already seen the T-shirts going around with a big old hypodermic needle on them, and all they say is Sonnen Dopes. So I think I'm going to get one. Anyway, yeah. It's kind of too bad because the guy was a good analyst. I mean, you have the obnoxiousness of Dana White, but, you know, obviously also he had some actual experience to fall back on. So that was kind of good about him, but you just can't have a guy in that position as a role model to young fighters or young fans. You know, it's just a bad idea overall. Dana White even said, you know, we had to get him. I like the guy, but yeah. So, you know, as much as a good promoter as he was of his own fight and a good controversy stirrer, he's just not good for the sport to have him as a public figure. And maybe he should go to promoting. I guess that would be a more fitting role for him. Maybe start his own league or join up with Nick Diaz, maybe. Those two personalities.
Well, I read today that Dana has not ruled out him coming back in some capacity, but it was something to the effect of, well, we'll see how he handles this. So I guess there may be a second chance for him down the road.
Right. And, here's a story Tony will probably like.
Yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin has come out and criticized John. He did say, you know, I respect who and what he is inside the octagon, make no mistake about that, but some things about Jones irritate him. He said, yeah, he annoys me, but in a good way. I would love to see him get his ass kicked because it's going to take us to be able to do that.
Who is he criticizing?
John Jones.
Oh, Jones. Okay, yeah. You kind of faded out there for a sec. Well, that's interesting. Sorry.
And he said, I come from pro wrestling. I'm not a judge, but I think he, Gustafson, did enough last time to get that victory. Some people agree, some don't. Nonetheless, it was a hell of a fight, and we knew Gus was on his way up to be a superstar. That match made him a superstar. But what that match proved to me about John Jones was that when he's in deep waters, he has the heart of a champion. So, that's Stone Cold Steve Austin laying down the truth there. John Jones. Would have been interesting to see him as an MMA fighter, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Antonio Bigfoot Silva, another guy with testosterone in his repertoire, has to undergo another surgery. This is one of those situations where it sounds like it could actually be a legitimate reason why this guy needs testosterone. Apparently, he's had a pituitary gland tumor, which has reemerged since he stopped doing the testosterone. He already had surgery earlier this year for a shoulder injury. Now he has to go and have this pituitary gland tumor removed again. He says, I will have to do the surgery again after my next fight, and then I will be cleared to train again in four or six weeks. I will have to do the surgery again since I can't take testosterone. He says he used DRT for the first time in his last fight, but obviously we know what happened there. He tested positive for elevated levels. And he also suffers from a condition called acromegaly, which I think explains why he's so freaking huge.
Giantism.
Yeah. But anyway, he also added, some music for Ego, the TRT band, is a problem for those who really need it. That was the first time I used it. I always fought without TRT, and I will continue. And he's suspended until September 7th for failing that test. So his target is UFC Fight Night in Brasilia, Brazil, on September 13th. So I guess we're going to have competing boxing and MMA events. I guess I'm thinking the Brazil time difference will make it not an issue. Talked about Kelvin Gastelum, 20% story there. What else we got? Ronda Rousey is back in the news again, obviously because she's fighting this weekend, but also because she was asked again about fighting Christian Justino, otherwise known as Cyborg, again last Friday. And she really ripped into the interviewer there, I guess, ripped into her possible future opponent. She says, I wanted to fight her, but the thing is, she's the one that ran away. They announced out of competition testing in the UFC and within 24 hours she asked for her release. Then she started saying that, oh, I won't be able to make 135 because then it will be much harder for me to have kids. Then I was like, she didn't give a flying fuck about having steroids would have affected her kids. Let's put an over-under on your miscarriages now, just based on that. So, pulling no punches, so to speak, there. And, we actually have a new writer, a guy named Chris Hunterman, and he's proposed an article about the double standard with, you know, the way the Diaz brothers are treated and the way Ronda is treated, and Chael Sonnen, too, all into the mix. You know, they've got all got kind of grating personalities, but Ronda seems to get half all the time, which is an interesting concept. I'd like to really get forward to what he comes up with on that. But this also brings up a point about the old Matt Mitrione suspension for calling out Fallon Fox, the transgender fighter there. You had Dana White say that Cyborg looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress. Okay, MMA. And yeah,
that's wrong.
It's funny, but yeah, it is wrong. So you know, these two, White and Rousey, have both said some pretty cruel things about this person. And like Mitrione, he said it about somebody who's not in the league. They said it about somebody who's not in the league. And I imagine that they've given the same pass to Ronda if she said that about somebody who is actually in the UFC right now, which I don't think should be tolerated. But, you know, they have a conduct policy for a reason, and they should start exercising cases like this. But, you know, she does at the same time make a legitimate point, you know. You know, what does that say about Cyborg, that she says she won't cut to 135 because of wanting to have kids and she put steroids in her system, which would obviously, you would think, make that a problem down the line. But I don't think you can really regulate Rousey because she is one of those people, one of those very few people in the UFC who might actually be bigger than the organization, especially because of all her movie roles and just the way that she put women's MMA on the map. Again, after Gina Carano left the sport. So, but at the same time, you know, you just really, I look at this and I say, just make the fight. You know, it doesn't seem that hard to get these two together in the cage. It should be. And Rousey also was drumming up some controversy over the last couple weeks because she said that she could beat any female at any weight class in a Brazilian jiu-jitsu match, which I just commented a couple times on a Sherdog thread on this, and it's quite the debate. you know, because some people think it's disrespectful. Some people think it's like you know, Michael Jordan said, it's not conceited, just seeing what you know you can do. So my perspective on this is, you know, if you can go out and say you're going to beat anyone at any weight class in that particular discipline, and you're not going to actually set up fights, people come and challenge you from that, then what's the point of saying something like that? And then also, you know, if you're saying you could beat any of these BJJ fighters at any weight class, why wouldn't you go up to 145 pounds to face Cyborg? You know, if you really have, you know, the nerve to come out and say something like that, and you obviously haven't had much of a challenge in the cage, so, you know, you're looking for a challenge, then bump up to 145 and settle the dispute there with in the actual cage instead of, you know, in a BJJ match. But then again, you know, you have this situation with the Metamoris now. It used to be no UFC fighter could participate in any kind of formal competition in any other sport. Now you got this Metamoris where all of a sudden they're giving these guys passes. Josh Barnett is going to have a main title fight there, or main event fight there in Metamoris, which is basically 20 minutes of grappling and BJJ, so nonstop 20 minutes until there's a winner. So, you know, if they're going to allow these other fighters to do it, they should allow Rousey to do that, and at least a couple of those BJJ fighters have said they would do that, and no word from Rousey whether she'd accept those challenges.
Yeah, well, I think we beat this horse. You know, this kind of a dead horse in my mind. I mean, until she fights Cyborg, I mean, that's
right.
What so many fans wanted to see. And she even made the comment once under the right circumstance that she could submit Cain Velasquez. And I'm just listening to this, and it's like, you know, and in her comment on Mayweather, I guess, you know, how she deal with him, and I'm thinking, my God, where is this coming from? Who is her PR agent? So, that's a very good point. You know, what do you say? Action speaks louder than words. And if she
right.
knows that she won't be called out on it, say anything, because she knows that the fight's probably not going to happen. I mean, I still think that it could be arranged, but I don't think Dana wants it to happen. I mean, to be fair, Chris is not as marketable as maybe it just comes down to that. I don't know. We you know, we've talked about this before, and that seems to be what it comes down to in my mind.
My big question, though, in this whole discussion about bragging rights, I guess, where all of a sudden does Metamoris get the authority to let UFC fighters compete?
Yeah.
Do they have some connection to the UFC that I don't know about? I mean, I haven't really done a lot of research on this, but
I know that Rogan trains with Eddie Bravo, and I know Bravo competed. I can't remember if we talked about that with Hoyler Gracie, and it's just a fabulous, very exciting give and take 20 minutes. I mean, it made a lot of people really grasp how exciting jiu-jitsu can be. And I know Rogan's a big fan, but I don't know if there's a formal connection. And you have a good point there on that, because what is the whole rationale of not allowing them to do anything? Because they might get hurt, right?
Yeah, and just because it's grappling doesn't mean you can't get hurt.
Well, I've been hurt worse at times. I mean, in the stand-up game, I mean, if you get rocked or you have a headache for a while, but if you get knocked out, hopefully you get back up and go home. But I mean, if you're caught in a joint lock and don't submit quick enough, it may be quite a while before you're back in action.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. Very interesting about that.
All right. Well, we got to move on here. Another retirement. This is a big one. 5-time heavyweight champion Evander Holyfield turns 52 in October. I didn't know I shared the same birth month as him, but I know now. Says he's finally says he's officially done. He says they're putting me in the Hall of Fame on the 9th, so it will be official. Won't nobody fight me, and now I don't want to get hit. And the record stands is 44-10-2 with 29 KOs. And that's it. So another guy, another couple guys who have retired already are getting back involved and stuff. Tommy Hitman Hearns, he's not getting back in the ring, but he's trying to fight flight in the Detroit neighborhood where he grew up. Hearns is involved in a July 9th effort to clean up a section of Helen Street near East Grand Boulevard on the city's east side. And he says that when he drives down the street, he doesn't see the neighborhood that once made me a world champion. Plans are for people to pick up trash, remove brush, and paint over graffiti. And a number of others are helping put together the cleanup along with Repair the World Detroit, Jewish volunteer organization. And, of course, as everybody knows, Detroit's been a mess for years, including vacant homes and buildings and thousands of structures that have been razed. So needs all the help it can get, and good on Tommy to get involved in that. Another guy who retired and came back, Frenchman Jean-Marc Mormack, two-time former WBC and WBA cruiserweight champion, made a successful return to the ring on Thursday. Last Thursday, with the referee stopping the fight against Hungary's Tomas Lodi in the fourth round. Mormack had not fought since losing out in the fourth round to Vladimir Klitschko back on March 2012 in Düsseldorf, Germany. So at the age of 42, he's off the sidelines, up to 27 months out of the ring. And he knocked his opponent down in the fourth for an eighth count, referee stepping in to stop the bout moments later. So who knows, he might be competing for another world title soon enough. And Vladimir Klitschko, an IBF mandatory challenger, Kubrat Kulev, met for the first time last Wednesday at a press conference in Hamburg, Germany, to kick off their September 6th fight. Kulev was on the attack, demanding that Klitschko do pre-fight drug testing. And the Klitschko camp maintains Vlad will only undergo doping tests in accordance with the requirements of the German Boxing Federation, which are post-fight only. So this brings back kind of the whole story of Mayweather versus Pacquiao. Going back and forth there. I still don't even know if that lawsuit's ever been settled. But anyway, Kubrat and Kulev basically pissed Vladimir off with this, and he said, Kulev has already defeated boxers who were taller than me. He is the best heavyweight boxer after the champion. So Kulev actually said, I am tested for the use of illicit substances at least six times a year. It's unfair if Klitschko won't pass the same test that I do. If you don't take the test, you are not a correct person. Whatever that means. You know, stay at home, Klitschko said to that. We'll see what happens there, but man, that's kind of an interesting one. I don't think Klitschko has been accused in any recent press conferences or anything like that with any of his past opponents of taking any foreign substances. And, you know, you look at his brother, and they're both pretty big guys. I don't know if either one of them have a history of testing positive or anything, but then again, it seems like they always fight overseas. So Kulev may have a point there. Who knows? And very quickly, I guess, now that we've got Reggie waiting in the wing, we got to go over a couple big UFC cards this weekend. Weidman versus Machida, UFC 175. That's a big Saturday card. Chris Weidman versus Lyoto Machida. That one's not coming up for some reason. So let's start with the Ultimate Fighter 19 finale. I think that's on Sunday night. We've got Corey Anderson, 2-0, fighting Matt Van Buren, who's 6-2 on the co-main event for one of the weight classes, Ultimate Fighter Championship. And Eddie Gordon, 6-1, fighting Diego Lima, who's 9-1. So those are your house winners there, deciding who's going to get the official designation. We've got Forrest Frank, who's 16-4-1, fighting BJ Penn. Talked about that one, predicted that one already. BJ Penn is 16-9-2. We got Carlos Augusto Filho, 6-2, fighting Derek Lewis, who's 10-2. Dustin Ortiz, who's 13-3, fighting Justin Scoggins, who's 9-0. Kevin Lee, who's 7-1, fighting Jesse Bronson, who's 13-4. Yuma Diecki Torkson, probably butchering that, he's 14-1, fighting Leandro Issa, who's 11-4. This one's a pretty big record to be way down on the undercard, but Adriano Martins, he's 25-7, fighting Juan Manuel Puig, who's 11-2. And Daniel Spahn, 8-3, fighting our boy Patrick Walsh there. And we'll have to talk a little bit after I get through these last two about that. Alexis Dufresne, 5-0, fighting Sarah Morris, who's 3-1, another Ultimate Fighter alum there. Robert Drysdale is on the card. He's 6-0, fighting Keith Barrett, who's 5-0 in the first fight. And talk about Patrick Walsh. I just last night watched last week's episode where Patrick fought. And, man, I was very disappointed that Patrick used his wrestling almost exclusively on defense until the last second of the second and third round. And the whole entire fight, he was just throwing hands. And throwing hands, that guy has been criticizing other fighters for doing with his hands at his waist. I think he put his hands up maybe like twice for a half a second each time. And I sent him a Facebook message. You probably heard it from a million different sources already, but I kind of tried to frame it like that. Hey, I know you've been over this a million times in your head, but you've got to keep at least one hand up. And you know, you've got a lot more skills that you can bring to the table. Leg kicks. I kept thinking, you know, he's out there fighting as a southpaw there. The other guy's fighting traditional. His leg is right there for you to kick. You know, take away his lead hand. If you're going to fight on the feet the whole time, that's fine. If you think that's your best option, then take out his lead leg so he can't punch back. And you got that fight won. I mean, if only he had thrown leg and body kicks, I think he would have won that fight.
Go ahead.
So, you know, he's got to have a more complete game. I think he realizes that by now. I know he's been working with a lot of different fighters. He talked on our show about working with John Howard and Chuck O'Neill. You know, and sometimes that's a style thing. And believe it or not, I think he was doing well with that style, with the head movement he was using. But he also got popped really early and got a cut under his eye, so...
Yeah, I didn't see that one because my hotel room at the casino didn't have Fox Sports 1. But you remember from when he was on the show, and we kind of got around to the fact that he was sort of just bum-rushing his opponent. I mean, we didn't word it like that, but I remember he made the statement, well, I do know how to box, but I was just throwing these wild punches as part of a strategy, and I kind of wondered, well, hey, it worked for him in his first fight, but if you know how to box, box.
Right.
So.
And, you know, you could tell it was kind of like a rhythm thing for him, too, because the way he kept moving his hands side while they were at his waist, like he was kind of, you know, looking for the rhythm, dancing a little bit. But... you know, the head movement can only do so much. I mean, after the fight, you could see all around his eye and his forehead was all banged up. And he came into that fight with much shorter reach, too. So for him to be able to land as many punches as he did with that style, I thought was very impressive. But it's MMA, it's not boxing, so you got to do more. And the other thing was he was training with the other team for a day. And his whole team got on his case about that. And they treated him kind of like shit about the whole issue, even though Frankie Edgar gave him permission to go over and train with those guys. And he didn't reveal any secrets. Nobody tried to even ask him anything about the other opponents that had still yet to fight the red guys. So I think that was a little unjustified there. He was almost about to cry, it seemed, in the locker room when they ambushed him about it. And it kind of reminded me of that other Ultimate Fighter, I forget which one, but the one that I did the article about that season where the wrestler there that they ambushed him saying that he shouldn't have been picked for the fight or something like that, or shouldn't have went with him for the fight, ambushed him in the locker room. So I guess that's kind of been a theme from time to time, that they go after their own teammates at the wrong time, just before they're supposed to fight. They've got their whole team coming out against them. So that might have had something to do with it, you know, so it kind of created a natural rivalry. Already he's fighting his own teammate. So, you got issues there. But on top of that, to have this come up so that there's kind of animosity between the two of them, and he's not thinking straight. It just was a very unfortunate situation for Pat. But hopefully against Daniel Spahn will allow him to prove that it was a fluke. He's going to do a lot better down the line. Definitely something that we'll keep an eye on. We'll talk about next week, I'm sure. We've got to connect with Reggie Johnson. We had Reggie on the show before, a while back, years ago now. But he's actually been involved in trying to tour the country with a bunch of big-name guys, including the aforementioned Evander Holyfield. And I think Mike Tyson, too, is getting involved. But we'll have to ask him to give us a little bit more insight on that one. I know it's called something like the Champions or Legends Tour. So he's actually been pretty active on Facebook lately too, posting all his old boxing career photos and pumping everybody up. We'll get him on in a minute here. There he is. Need some dialing music. Letterman. Anyway. While we're waiting, who do you like to win the weed? I guess we got
please leave your message for...
Hello, Reggie. This is Rich from Fight News Unlimited. We're trying to get a hold of you. I know I was supposed to send you a reminder a little earlier in the day, but hopefully you get this message, and we'll try you back about 10 minutes. It's 9:19 my time right now, so we'll try you back at 9:30. Hopefully we can get this interview done. All right. So, like I said, I was supposed to remind him. I emailed him earlier in the week, but I was supposed to remind him earlier this morning. I forgot because of my sleep schedule being all fucked up. Thank you, UFC. So, let's go. Chris Weidman, Lyoto Machida. Weidman, of course, is undefeated, 11-0. Machida is 21-4. You'd have to think Machida has the experience factor in his corner, but I said it before, I said it 100 times. I hate Machida's style. He avoids the fight as much as he advances it sometimes. And I think Weidman will eat him up on this in this fight. And I've actually gone as far as telling one Sherdog poster that I'd cover his losses if Machida wins this fight. He bets on Weidman. So I guess they got some skin in the game.
Well, I think Weidman is a smart guy. I mean, he's got a great team. I think Longo's a genius, and I think that they're going to really study that style, because initially when Machida came along, no one could figure him out because no one could get the kind of sparring that his style is. And he was a mystery, but slowly but surely, I think that with the Shogun fight and then, of course, the John Jones situation and a few others, a lot of that mystique started to go away. So I think the blueprint's there to beat him, and I think Chris has it. But, again, having said that, it is interesting because Machida can pull surprises. He's very unorthodox. But I hope the fight doesn't turn into a snooze fest, and it does have that possibility, too, of five rounds of tag.
Right. Well, I think Weidman will probably try to use wrestling so that he can just totally take out Machida's karate. And I know Machida's pretty good at avoiding the takedowns, but I don't think he's ever faced a guy quite like Weidman. And I think that's probably going to be his number one goal, is to kind of somehow, find a way around the karate timing and the, bouncing around the cage the whole time, waiting for the right opening. I don't think Weidman's going to let that fly. I think he's going to go right at him, fight in close, and take all that out of it.
Well, if you go back to the John Jones fight, Machida, and if you remember that fight, Machida really was making it a fight in that first round. If I recall right, I think I even gave him the first round, but finally, when John Jones just had enough of it and he pinned him against the cage and just used physicality.
Right.
And just did that standing choke.
He has no answer when you get in close.
Yeah.
And he relies way too much on the kicking and the long distance stuff. And he falls apart when it's not there. Although I guess you could say there's an exception with the way he knocked out Evans. That's been a long time since that fight.
Yeah, and I would have to think that Weidman has planned on some of these contingencies, and I think another key is to not get frustrated, because you remember the Ryan Bader fight, and Bader became so frustrated with Machida that he just started a bum rush, and that's exactly what Machida wanted. And if you do bum rush him and get caught coming in, Machida's got that unorthodox karate punching style that can do some damage. So I don't see Weidman falling for that. That would be, I think, the only thing that would do him in is mental. So
the other thing about this fight, too, is Machida really hasn't done much to earn this fight lately. You know, he had that real controversial win over Phil Davis had a controversial win over him. But, he really hasn't, put himself in that position to have everybody begging for this fight, that's for sure. And as we know, there were at least a couple better options that didn't pan out, Vitor Belfort being one of them.
Yeah.
So I think that's got to be weighing on his mind. He's got a lot to prove in this one, so the pressure's really probably more on him than Weidman. The new writer did a report on this and talked a lot about how they called it the Machida era, and it may not be back.
Yeah.
Ronda Rousey, 9-0, fighting Alexis Davis, 16-5, and usually champions don't look past their opponents, but Ronda actually came out and made a statement that she wants to take a little break from MMA after she beats Alexis Davis. So, she's obviously not giving her much respect or hope to beat her. So I think Alexis Davis has a huge opportunity here. Another Sherdog post about the Rousey and Davis fighting here talked a little bit about fighter pay and how Alexis Davis in the UFC embedded show there was living in quite a, not impoverished, but, pretty scant surroundings there, not much, not what you'd expect from a professional fighter at her level fighting in a co-main event to be living in an apartment with her, that they showed on the broadcast. But we don't even know if that's her apartment or if she's going to somebody else's house. Who knows? But anyway, the point was that, all these fighters should be making more. But a lot of people made the point that, hey, this woman signed a contract. She knows that if she beats Rousey, she gets a whole new level of respect and opportunity. So, you know, it is what it is. I've always made the point that, you know, the fighters on the main card seem to get taken care of pretty well. But the ones on the preliminaries are usually the ones that are making shit money, and they need some kind of solution to make sure that these guys get the same opportunities that the main event guys get. And my main suggestion has always been make a bonus system for the preliminaries only, because a lot of times the preliminaries actually have better fights that should earn bonuses and don't, just because they are preliminary fights and no other reason, you know. These last couple of UFC cards last weekend were a perfect example. You know, somebody got a performance of the night for a submission when you had a war like Joe Ellenberger's fight. That should have got a performance of the night for both guys, you know, because one guy lost and he shouldn't, and the other guy put on a hell of a fight to even get one judge to look at him the right way, you know?
Yeah.
So situations like that, I think maybe they should look at taking the bonus system, and even if it's half the bonus that the main event card fighters get, just make it for just the preliminary fighters and watch how many guys will make sure that you watch the preliminaries because they want that bonus.
Sure, because as recent as 4 or 5 years ago, one of our former guests, you know, my old buddy and training partner, Forrest Pett, said that it was, on one of his events, it was $6,000 to show and $6,000 to win. And your only chance of a decent payday would be to get fight of the night, knockout of the night, or submission of the night. And you're right. If you're not on the main draw, you're not getting that kind of attention. You're not going to get the votes, and it's just a horrible situation. But back to the Davis fight, how do you see her winning this? I mean, I've been going through this in my head. I don't see it happening on defeat. And Ronda's never really, with the exception of Liz Carmouche and that attempted choke, has never really been threatened too much with submissions, so that's the question. How does she win? How can she win?
And at the same time, I think she's kind of trying to experiment a little bit with her game. She doesn't want to end every fight by armbar. That's her bread and butter. That's what she's best at. She ends up pretty much getting it almost every time. I think the last few fights, we've seen people push her a little bit past what she's used to. Specifically, obviously, Cupcake Quigley gave her a little bit of run for her money, and still now the one woman that spent the longest amount of time with her in any one fight. So I think Alexis is probably going to have to watch what Tate did, and obviously she's going to have to defend the armbar as best as she can, but her only chance really is to come out in the first round gun blazing and throw every type of thing that she can at her. She's going to have to fight like T.J. Wahlberg there. Or not T.J. Wahlberg there. Was it T.J. Wahlberg? It just fought... got the title there. Anyway. She's going to have to fight like the guy called the Mexican bullfighter, Irish step dancing Mexican bullfighter.
I love that moniker.
I'm going to have to take a page out of his book and fight that way and just have a lot of movement and keep her distance and not get involved in any grappling at all. It's just going to have to be a bloodfest. And I'll tell you, if you're ever going to bet for a long shot, I think this is one, because I think most of the bookies have her at a 20-1 underdog. So, you know.
Woo.
Might have to take a miracle, but miracles have happened.
Well, I think all of us can remember that night in February of 1990 when there was a 42-1 underdog. I don't need to fill you in on the name. So, theoretically, it's possible, but 20-1. Wow.
Yeah.
Woo.
We also have Stefan Struve coming back from a heart situation that he had to get cleared up. He's 25-6 fighting Meathead Matt Mitrione, who's 7-3.
Meathead.
That's his real nickname. accepted nickname. He got it on the Ultimate Fighter show when Kimbo Slice was on there with him. Actually, we've been trying to get Meathead on the show, and we've got his contact for his agent, but just haven't been able to put it together. I think it's a great fight for both of these guys, I don't know who's going to win. It's one of those type of bouts that anything can happen.
Chris, just excuse me. Chris made that point about Mitrone being a very curious individual. And he's an enigma. So you're right. Anything can happen in that one.
Yeah, we got to go through the rest of these pretty quickly. Uriah Hall's 8-4 fighting Thiago Santos. He's 9-2. We got Marcus Brimage 6-2 fighting Russell Doan, who's 13-3. And this one is really puzzling to me. Uriah Faber versus Alex Caceres, otherwise known as Bruce Leroy. Talk about another funny nickname. Bruce Leroy is only 10-5. And he hasn't had any really notable names who he's beaten since he's been in the UFC, but he's just a character. That's the only reason why I think they keep him around. And Uriah Faber, 30-7. 30 wins and 7 losses. And not only that, but they're fighting in the number 6 fight of the night. So I guess this will be the first main card fight, which just doesn't make any sense to me. But
No, it's been moved to the last prelim fight.
Oh, okay. So still, yeah, so, that's so a why is Uriah Faber a preliminary fighter?
Well, he tried to make lemonade out of lemons. What's that cliche or something? Last night on the news, he was saying that he volunteered for it because he felt that more people will see him on the prelims than would on the pay-per-view. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. But he figures that there'll be a lot more exposure in the bars, and that, you know, a lot of people just don't want to order the pay-per-view, but they will watch the prelims, and he's happy to have more people see him perform. And he also had a few words to say about the Colorado, who just left, is Bang Ludwig. Yeah, he said there's a little bit of friction with him and Bang Ludwig, so I wonder if we got a situation with him and Dillashaw. Well, time will tell.
That's the guy we're calling the Mexican wolf fight.
Yeah.
So that's how Davis has to fight. All right. So we got to move on here pretty quickly through the rest of these. Ildemar Alcantara, 20-6, fighting Kenny Robertson, who's 13-3. Chris Camozzi, 19-7, fighting Bruno Santos, who's 13-1. Rob Font, 10-1, fighting Jord Roop, who's 15-10-1. And Guilherme Vasconcelos, definitely butchering that. He's 3-1, fighting Luke Zachrich, who's 13-3. And finally, Kevin Casey from a couple of seasons ago on The Ultimate Fighter. He's 8-3, fighting Bubba Bush, who's 8-2. So that's it for that card. And let's try to get Reggie back on the broadcast. See if he checks his messages.
Please leave your message for...
Well, looks like we have to take a rain check on Reggie. Probably have to be a couple weeks from now because, Tom, get ready for this one. Guess who we're going to have on the show next week? I'll give you one hint. His record is 50 wins, 30 losses, 7 draws, and 1 no contest. He's a UFC veteran. 2 hints.
50 wins and 30 losses. Wow. I'm just thinking of all these possibilities here, and I'm going to have to tap out. Who do we got?
Joni Carter.
Oh, how colorful he is. Mr. International. I met him at a card in Indiana back in 2004. Yeah, what a character. Oh, this will be fun.
Yeah, he actually, speaking of character, he kind of went after Chael Sonnen on one of my posts that was on LinkedIn, and I happened to be connected with him on LinkedIn, and so I said, hey, we'd love to interview you. I'm a big fan.
He's been around the block.
Tony would have liked him if he was an MMA fan, just because he kind of reminded you of a wrestling guy coming in and all the steps, the cane and the. I'm sure he probably wore something like Ego to Phillies games. At one point in his career, he wore something like that.
Cool. That'd be cool. I mean, I'll make a good conversation with this.
Yeah.
There's ridiculous attire involved. You know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, he's definitely a costume guy. You two would hit it off.
Well, that's where I'm gonna gear my part of the conversation towards next week.
All right. So we haven't really talked about any of the upcoming boxing matches, even though we still got to cover what's going on in Daytona Beach, Florida, with World Series of Fighting 11. We've neglected all the boxing matches, so let's check that out real quick. Do you know offhand what the big fight is this weekend in boxing, Tony?
Offhand, I do not. Let me see if there's anything on hand.
I'm trying to load BoxRec before I'm asking you. It's taking forever. All right.
I don't have any better luck with my system. I got to figure out if there's any anything local this week. And not local, anything televised, I mean.
All right, while we're waiting for that, might as well go through the World Series of Fighting 11 card, because I got that up. We've got a big event at the top here. We've got Nick Newell fighting in the main event. He is as famous for his talent as he is for being the only fighter out there in competition who has less than two arms, I guess. He's got 1.5 arms, he's done well with it. He's 11-0. Fighting Justin Gaethje, probably mispronouncing that. He's got a J in there somewhere. And he's 11-0. So somebody's always got to go here, and Nick Newell's going to make his television debut, I think. I don't think he's been on TV for any big fights before, unless it was with the World Series of Fighting. But also, a very big fight in the co-main event, Dennis Hallman and John Fitch. Both of them have tremendous experience. Fitch, of course, thrown out of the UFC, not because he lost a bunch of fights, but because Dana White thought his style was boring. Figure. Fitch, 25-6-1. Hallman is 53-14-2. Actually, he's probably been most famous recently for calling out Ronda Rousey as delusional and mentally challenged. He told a story recently. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but he told a story recently about how Ronda attacked the person that was responsible for the paychecks for the coaches. And, you know, the lady tried to explain why some of Ronda's coaches didn't get paid, and she was like, "You don't talk while I'm speaking to you. Understand?" And Dennis Hall just gave that story, and I was kind of floored by that. Long suspected Ronda's not right in the head, but I mean, she's had a very difficult childhood with her father's death and everything, and you know, some of that explains all that. But it seems like she's got another side to her that is even worse than what she says in public. So, God help you if you get on her bad side. It's Melvin Gillard, speaking of experience, is also on this card. He's 31-13-2, fighting Jesus Cavalcante. So, I'm sure we'll have a Jesus fight of the week in the boxing cards, but this is our Jeeziest fight of the week. Cavalcante is 18-7-1. We got Pablo Alfonso on the card. He's 9-5, fighting Cody Bollinger, another guy thrown off the Ultimate Fighter. He's 15-2. Actually, he didn't cut weight enough, so kind of walked off. And we've got Jake Hune, 5-3, fighting Kendrick Meary, 5-1. Also, Bollinger, by the way, was a former guest of ours way back in the day when we were on another network. And we got the preliminary fights. Neiman Gracie, 1-0, versus Dustin Holyko, who's 2-0. Jose Caceres, I'm not sure if he's related to Alex, he's 7-5, fighting Walber Brito de Barros, who's 6-5. And then the first fight of the night is Mohamed Darice, 1-0, fighting Rashawn Spencer, who's 4-6. So, at what we've got here on BoxRec.
Well, we don't have luck this weekend. On a Saturday night, there is not a single card in the United States.
Really?
I looked on Friday, which I figured there wouldn't be much in the United States at all, figuring it's 4th of July weekend. And the only thing I found as remotely interesting on Friday was a fight card down in Australia with former world champion Michael Katsidis, who I thought retired, so I guess he unretired. That's why I found that interesting. And he's 29-6, 24 knockouts.
Fighting for a coach.
He had a couple losses in there. He was actually 4 out of 5 bouts he had lost back a couple years ago. Marquez stopped in the 9, Robert Guerrero beaten by decision. He had a win sandwiched in there. Then a loss to Ricky Burns and a loss to Albert Mensa. He came back, and that was in 2012. Came back a few months ago for the first time in 2 years. Had a stoppage win, and now he's back for the guy by the name of Graham Earl down in Australia. So that's really the only thing of significance or interest this weekend. A lot of flights in like Mexico or the Philippines, maybe a card or two in Japan or Nicaragua. But
yeah,
we're going to see televised.
That Casitas fight, it's not a big title, but it's one of those things that Iceman John Scully called a major problem with boxing. There's too many titles out there. This is only sport. Hold on a minute here. It's going to take a while. It's for the vacant World Boxing Union German version, which is in parentheses here, light welterweight title. Okay.
Very important.
How do you have a title called World Boxing Union? Okay, that's the way the title starts out, but it's the German version.
In Australia.
Yeah, fought in Australia. nothing wrong with boxing when you have a situation like that. A German version of a world title. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense there. But as we mentioned earlier, of course, there is that other fight in the same area, New Zealand, not Australia, but Joseph Parker versus Brian Minto. And Joseph Parker is 8-0 with 7 knockouts. Minto is 39-7 with 25 knockouts. This is on Saturday. Of course, they're not celebrating July 4th or 5th down there in New Zealand. This is for the interim PABA heavyweight title and the WBO Oriental heavyweight title.
Nice.
So neither of these guys are Oriental, and it's New Zealand, so another situation that doesn't make sense. Both of the other fights on this card, too, are for the WBO Oriental title. Welterweights Jeff Horn, 7-0-1 with 6 knockouts. Fighting Fernando Ferreira da Silva, 32-3-1 with 24 knockouts. That's for the WBO Oriental welterweight title. And then we have light heavyweights Robert Berridge, 23-1-1 with 19 knockouts, fighting Rogério Damasco, who's 12-1-2 with 12 knockouts. That's for the PABA light heavyweight title and the WBO Oriental light heavyweight title. So unbelievable there, but that's the state of boxing today, I guess.
Well, you know what? I think it was a lot of it has to do, you know, this was a tough weekend. A lot of people are, you know what? I'm surprised they didn't have any fight that is down on Atlantic City. Just because so many people, I mean, Atlantic City is busy every weekend down, you know, during the summer.
Still there, Tony? Tony, you're fading out.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I kind of got my phone off the plug, trying to use earbuds now.
And I said we'd have a Jesus fight of the week, but ironically enough, I don't see more than one Jesus. Jesus is the guy's middle name. Down in Argentina, he's the main event fighter, believe it or not. And he's only 3-0. Marcos Jesus Cornejo, 3-0 with 2 knockouts. They don't even have an opponent for him yet, and it's tomorrow night. I hope they get their shit together down there in Argentina.
Yeah, they'll throw some schlub in there.
So that's about it, I guess. Let's see if I got anything else. Any new stuff that I didn't talk about. No, I got a couple more boxing things, I think, somewhere in here. I did cut and paste the old weekly boxing roundup. Boxing Insider Notebook. Harris Landi Lara is looking pretty good in sparring for his fight, I think, next week or the week after that?
It's next week on the 12th. I'm interested to see how that fight pans out, because he's got the boxing style to really give Canelo a lot of problems, similar to what Austin Trout did. But at the same time, he took a lot of punishment in the fight with Alfredo Angulo, got knocked down, I think, about 4 times. And Canelo is a more well-rounded boxer.
Right.
So, you know, it could be a chance that, you know, Canelo took him down, he might keep him down.
Yeah, he's got way more experience. He's 43-1-1 with Arislandi's record being 19-1-2. I've actually seen Arislandi Lara fight out there in Vegas at the Cosmo Hub. I was very impressed by him, but he's a boxer more than a brawler. So,
right, exactly.
Use more of that. Keep his distance from Alvarez to win this fight.
So in other words, we have a styles make fights, right? A clash of styles.
Lara says, quote, "My sparring partners are pushing me with numerous styles." Good transition, Tom. "And I'm adapting to all of them comfortably." He also added, "I told them to come extra hard to prepare me for the pressure Canelo is going to bring. I feel great, and my timing is right on."
So, and I think Canelo's got to avoid making the same mistake he did in the Mayweather fight. It's, and somebody wrote a great tagline for it: "You're bigger, you're stronger, you're younger, you hit hard. Let's try to outbox the best boxer on the planet."
Also, some of the big boys in the news, Derek Chisora and Tyson Fury are going to be fighting July 26th in Manchester, UK. And Chisora has been flapping his gums as usual. He said, "He's a big guy, Fury is, and I'll be looking to smash his body up with my punches. He'll definitely fall from a body punch. He won't be able to stand the head that I'll be bringing. I'll be chopping him down like a tree." Just always good to hear from me, because I'm a lumberjack.
Yeah.
He went on to further state, there'll be no place for him to hide in that ring, and I'll be hunting him down until he's got nowhere to go, and I'll nail him. But the time I've finished with him, he'll be the size of me. I don't want to hear any excuses from him after the fight. You better be ready because he's getting knocked out.
Woo! Woo-hoo! Lots of trash talk. Oh, man.
Sora is pretty famous for that. Had some trash talk that erupted into a brawl once, if you remember correctly. We also have next Saturday, July 12th, the Road to Golovkin in Kiel, which is a HBO special examining, of course, that matchup between middleweights Gennady Golovkin, 29-0, and Daniel Kiel, who's 30-2. So that show premieres July 12th on HBO. Bouts in Madison Square Garden, also the same day the Chisora fight, July 26th. Championship boxing. Another fight that's been announced, Carl Frampton versus Kiko Martinez. I don't have their records in front of me, but press conference on this was held yesterday in London. It's going to be for the IBF World Super Bantamweight title. And another fight, July 18th, Emmanuel Taylor versus Kareem Mayfield. This is under the Joe DiGuardia Star Boxing banner. That's going to be in the Paramount in Huntingdon, New York, on Friday, July 18th. ESPN Friday Night Fights will broadcast that one. And it's going to be headlined by a 10-round junior welterweight bout between Emmanuel Taylor and Kareem Mayfield. The co-feature will be the Hebrew Hammer, Cletus Seldon of Long Island, in an 8-round junior welterweight bout against an opponent to be announced. Light heavyweights Isaac Chalimba and Corey Cummings will be facing each other August 2nd. The main event there is Sergey Kovalev, who's 24-0-1, and Blake Caparello, who's 19-0-1, at the Revel Casino Hotel. Chalimba there is 22-2-2 and is 17-6-1. And this is a main event Kathy Duva fight, former guest of ours, Kathy. She said, this fight will not be televised in the United States, so we have a really nice light heavyweight doubleheader exclusively for the fans in attendance at Revel on August 2nd. Chalimba is a piece of our plan for the division, and I'm excited to see what he can do against a big puncher like Cummings. Darlys Perez captured the WBA interim title with a victory against Arginis Lopez last Saturday. Perez 30-1, Lopez 17-1. That fight was in the Dominican Republic. It was a big night there in the Dominican. Perez outworked Lopez and won by decision with scorecards of 116, 112, 117, and 111. Twice, 117 and 111s. He said, I knew I had to give it my all to come out here and earn a decision. I felt like I was in control of the fight from the very beginning. I never let up and kept coming strong with controlled pressure. I know my promoters, Gary Shaw and Thompson Boxing, have some big plans for my future. I'm just going to enjoy this win and get back to work when I get home. I'm happy to bring this title home to Colombia. And another Perez... Michael Perez has a contract about to expire. I wonder if Al Haymon knows.
Yeah.
Late April, Michael Perez defeated Jorge Ramiro to defend his 2013 WBA Fedolatin Championship. Perez is 20 wins, 1 loss, 2 draws is his record, and he's ranked number 16 in the junior welterweight division. And, of course, he's currently signed with Golden Boy Promotions, so who better than Al Haymon to snatch him up? Golden Boy doesn't get him back. Gary Shaw Productions and Antonio Leonard Promotions have announced the return of two of their highly touted prospects. Kenneth Bossman Sims Jr., 2-0, will go against Evan Woolsey, 2-2, and Eduardo Martinez, 2-0, will box LaVale Wilson, 1-3, on July 11, 2014, as part of an ESPN Friday Night Fights card. The main event... that one is Toriano Johnson, 14-1, and Mike Dobronsky, 14-0-1. That's a middleweight fight there. And lightweight Art Hovhannissian, 17-1, and Jonathan Mycelo, 20-1, will meet in the co-feature. And we only got 5 minutes left, so I'm going to end it a little early because we don't really have anything else unless you guys do.
I don't think so, but if you guys want some quiet entertainment, and I can send you, I'll send you the link to the Joe Frazier statue, but if you want some other quiet entertainment, on my YouTube page now, speaking of costumes, there's a video of me dressed up in my full outfit, so selfie videoing myself singing Twist and Shout.
Is that from the Phillies game?
That was from the Phillies game.
I already saw it on Facebook.
Wasn't that entertaining?
Yes. It was kind of funny, but you shouldn't make fun of your mom like that.
Well, she wasn't being as cool as me. She was standing there. I was like, everybody in this video is consuming at least one alcoholic beverage. I had about 12. I said, except for her.
Somebody had to drive, but,
no, well, no, we were taking the train.
Oh, okay.
And then we had somebody picking us up at the train, so we already had a DD. But before I go, talking about when we were talking earlier about funny costumes and everything, and just how crazy opportunity works out like this to end up doing something nice. Because I mean, people always say karma's a bitch, and I believe that. But I also say karma can be your best friend. If you do good, you get good. And a couple months ago, I'm at work doing my job, and I get a call from a guy in Florida. He works for a doctor's office. You know, just checking on bills and, you know, payments and stuff like that. So as the guy was talking, I said, oh, you know, just making conversation while I'm loading all the stuff up. I said, where in Florida are you from? And I forget where he told me. And I said, yeah, I'll be down in a week or so, coming down to the Tampa area, going to Clearwater for some Phillies games instead of a baseball guy. He goes, oh, really? Well, I'm originally from the Philadelphia area. He goes, I lived in Delaware. I grew up there. Still got family in the area. And he goes, enjoy your trip to Florida, this and that. So we start talking more and more. And I said, hey, if you see any of this stuff on any of the Philly games, if you ever get any of the Philly games broadcast to you, always look for the guy in the Uncle Sam outfit. And I gave him my Facebook fan page. And he looks it up. He sends me a real nice message. And he calls me up about a week ago. And he goes, hey, you know, he goes, I'm interested in checking on the claim. I'm like, I don't think that's Ron who I talked to before. But I'm playing it off because I want to make a fool out of myself. And then he goes, is this the Tony that dresses up at all the Phillies games? I said, yeah, it is. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, you know, I actually I talked to my cousin who still lives in the Philadelphia area. She's a diehard Phillies fan, and she's crippled with multiple sclerosis. And he goes, I mentioned you, because she watches every game. And he goes, hey, I mentioned a guy in Uncle Sam up. And she goes, oh, my God, I've seen him walking around the stadium at the games. And he goes, well, I actually communicate with him when I'm doing stuff at work. She thought that was the greatest thing in the world. So when I talked to this guy, Ron, this past week, I'm going to get her. Now, this sounds a little egotistical, yes, I know, but I'm doing a fine photo for her.
Cool.
All because I wore an outfit and I told the guy, well, I was trying to kill time, waiting for a claim to load, that I was coming to Florida. Just like the time I called the guy up for a T-shirt and I got Rich a job of rebuilding the website.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
It's all about networking.
Well, now, Tony, you're just going to have to start touring the cancer hospitals in Philadelphia there and spreading some...
You know what?
You're going to have to be the new patch.
Don't let, because there's a guy that does all... If you ever watch an Eagles game, and I know you're a Boston guy, but if you ever catch an Eagles game, you always see a guy online. Or at every game, they always show him. He's got shoulder pads on, his face all painted up. I saw him at a function one time. He looked pretty intimidating. But me and a friend of mine went over to say hi to him, and he was really actually so nice. But he's a diehard Eagles fan, and that's exactly what he is, he's a fan. But now the Eagles actually do send him to kids' hospitals, and he does promotional appearances for the Eagles. And I said, boy, if I could ever do that for the Phillies and, you know, just help making more people happy, karma's a bitch, but karma can be your best friend. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Rich, Tom, you guys have a great weekend. Tornado.
All right, guys.
Hasta la vista, and I'm signing off.
Happy birthday, okay. America.
Yes.
All right. Let's do it next week and enjoy the fight.
Okay.